Well, I just want to read these two short passages from Luke's Gospel and then to look at the question, and we refer back to them, of Jesus Christ, myth or real, so that we might choose. First of all, from the very beginning of Luke's Gospel, and then from towards the end of Luke's Gospel. Luke, a physician and historian, Luke, who wrote the Gospel, the third Gospel, but also wrote the book that comes after the Gospels, the book of the Acts of the Apostles, as it's given its full title, the sort of historical account of the very early days of the Christian church. So here it is from Luke 1 and then Luke 24. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good also to me to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. And then a little bit from towards the end. While they were still talking about this, that is, all the disciples, Jesus himself stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." And all this they were talking about was the resurrection and the account of the women who had gone to the tomb. The disciples were startled and frightened, thinking they saw a ghost. He said to them, "Why are you troubled, and why do doubts rise in your minds? Look at my hands and my feet. It is I, myself. Touch me and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you see I have." When he had said this, he showed them his hands and feet. And while they still did not believe it because of joy and amazement, he asked them, "Do you have anything here to eat?" They gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate it in their presence. Well, Jesus Christ, myth or real? It's sort of a commonplace. We probably all heard it at school at some point, at secondary school, and we've probably all heard it since, and it certainly gets sort of swilled around much of our media, that Jesus Christ didn't really exist. Or if he existed, it wasn't really Jesus Christ. It was just this bloke who happened to get a little bit like Brian in the Monty Python film, The Life of Brian, get a whole lot of sort of very favourable press surrounding him and started getting proclaimed as something that he'd never actually intended to be. That is, he was seized by other people and turned into something. Well, I want us to look at, for a little while, at some of the evidence, both in the Bible and outside of the Bible, that points to something which is said, but we don't often know why it's said, and that is that there is really no historical doubt whatsoever over Jesus Christ being real. Did he exist historically? Yes, there's no doubt that he existed. And there's also no doubt that what we read in our Bibles now and what Christian churches here in the UK and all over the world proclaim was believed right from the very beginning. Because people often say, "Oh, well, you can't trust the Bible because it was written by people who were, you know, pro-Jesus," so, well, they would have written that, wouldn't they? I want us just to sort of, for a few seconds, consider what the evidence is outside the Bible. There are a number of non-Christian, in fact, not just non-Christian, but one or two of them quite positively anti-Christian sources, documents, writers, authors, from the early centuries, who mention Jesus Christ, mention the church, mention what Christians did, and mention what Christians believe. There are five main historical non-Christian sources from outside the Bible. They are variously historians or satirists or others. In chronological order, they are Tacitus, Pliny the Younger, Josephus, the Babylonian Talmud, and a chap called Lucian of Samosata. Tacitus the first was a Roman historian. Pliny the Younger was a Roman governor of Bithynia who kept writing letters to the emperor at the time, and it's those letters that give us the data. Josephus was a Jewish historian who wrote a history of the Jewish people and concentrated a lot of it on that period when the Romans were in occupation. The Babylonian Talmud is a collection from around the 2nd century, 200 or so BC, AD, of writings that cover a much wider period by some of the Jewish rabbis. And then the last of those sources that I mentioned, Lucian of Samosata, was a Greek satirist in the second century, who wrote some really, really scathing satires. He was the kind of the Monty Python or Not the 9 o'clock News. He was the sort of the private eye kind of character of his day, or the if you think of any of the satirists that you can think of, he was the sort of the comic who poked fun at everybody of his day. Now I want to summarize in 7 points. Don't try and remember all 7, but just pick up the gist of it. What these 5 different sources end up saying, when you sift through and you sift out the bits that have been edited, particularly in Josephus, when you sift out all the bits that might mean something and might mean another thing or whatever, when you get to the sort of the solid stuff, what were these saying? Well, there are 7 things. First of all, is both Josephus and Lucian indicate that Jesus was regarded by all and sundry as being exceptionally wise. That is, he was known for his wise teaching. Very wise teacher. Second, Pliny and the Talmud and Lucian also say that he was regarded as a powerful and very revered teacher. So he wasn't just wise and known to be, but he was also very influential by his power, and did things that other teachers didn't do. So much so that he was exalted by the common people, not just by his followers in their later years, but by everybody he was revered. Third, Josephus and the Talmud also talk about him doing miracles, miraculous feats, feats of great power and extraordinary feats. So what from the extra-biblical sources, from people who weren't reading the Bible and recounting it, but were going by what people were saying and what people were doing, and tracing that back, Jesus was a great teacher, he was a revered teacher, and he did miracles. Fourth, Tacitus, Josephus, the Talmud, and Lucian, that is 4 out of the 5, all mention that he was crucified. That description or the crucifixion described in different ways, but they all mention that he was crucified. Tacit and Josephus pin it down to say that it occurred under Pontius Pilate. The Talmud says that it happened on the eve of the Passover. So again, what we read in the Bible, we find all the extra-biblical and, to some extent, anti-biblical sources recording, say, that's what happened. Fifth, in both Tacitus and Josephus, who were not Christians, there are references to the fact that the Christians from the earliest days believed that Jesus was raised from the dead. That is, and Tacitus is perhaps the clearest on it, that is that there was a brief moment, as Tacitus calls it, when the founder of this sect, as they would regard it, disappeared and was gone. And it seemed as if it died down. And after that, it sprang right up again and grew because he had appeared to the people. Sixth, Josephus is the clearest of the historians on the fact that the followers of Jesus from the earliest day regarded him as the Christ, the Messiah, and that he was worshipped. Both Pliny and Lucian, this is the 7th point, are very clear that Christians kept worshipping Jesus as God. So from the get-go, he was not just regarded as Jesus the man, Brian in the Monty Python movie, an ordinary guy just like the rest of us, but got hijacked by the publicists. But he was always regarded as being God, always worshipped by some. And that to worship Jesus as God, and again, some of the historians are clear on this, Lucian of Samosata, for instance, meant that you had to turn from all your other gods. So people from the word go figured that Jesus was a better God than any of the other gods that they were already worshipping. Now, all that comes from outside the Bible, from sources that are not just non-Christian, but some of them anti-Christian. It prompts the question, what's wrong with the Bible? Well, actually, nothing. Historically speaking, it is an extremely reliable text. The Gospels are very reliable indeed. The rest of the New Testament is also. If you go through, say, five of the most read and referred to historical documents that we have, ancient documents, if you want to know what they are, Thucydides' Peloponnesian War, Caesar's Gallic War, Tacitus' histories and Annals, then the New Testament. What you want to know, if you want to establish historical reliability, is you want to know the gap between the first writing and then the earliest known copy. And you also want to know the gap between the events that were written about and that first writing. So those two gaps, the events and the first recorded, the first writings that we've got, and the gap between the first writings and then all the copies that have mushroomed since. Those two gaps are the crucial ones. And if you go through those four ancient documents, and the first three are never really questioned at all by anybody, then the shortest gap between the events and the first writing is, guess what? Mark's Gospel in the New Testament, 30 years max. And the shortest gap between the first writing and the first full copy is again the New Testament. So on the criteria of reliability for historical documents, the New Testament wins hands down over those three others, Thucydides' Peloponnesian War, Caesar's Gallic Wars, and Tacitus' History and Annals. So there's nothing wrong with the historicity of the New Testament, and it's not really doubted by any of the historical scholars, whether they're Christian or not. Second, the Bible is full of historical stuff itself. Matthew begins his gospel with lots of genealogy, with a big long genealogy. Luke is littered all through with historical references. He wants to tie things down to who was ruling at what point. So Luke's gospel says when Jesus was born, you know, this is while Quirinius was governor of Syria, kind of thing. He's just wanting to pin it down so that Theophilus, that he's writing his gospel for, can do exactly the same. He can pin it down and say, yes, this actually happened. And it actually happened then. And then, and then, and then. And Luke has written, as we were reading at the very beginning, having himself thoroughly investigated so that Theophilus can be certain about what is being taught. Luke's purpose in writing, therefore, is to give us something historically reliable and solid, something which, given when he was writing, Theophilus could have gone off and tested himself. So he wasn't writing to try and hoodwink Theophilus. He was writing in order for Theophilus to be able to know with certainty that what Luke had passed on and all the rest of the Christians had passed on could be relied upon. And then, of course, we have the New Testament as a set of eyewitness accounts, either eyewitness accounts themselves or accounts that were written down from what eyewitnesses were speaking, saying verbally. And of course, if Mark's gospel was written within 30 years of Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection, then we know that not only Mark, but other historical, other parts of the New Testament as well, were written within the lifetime of those who were around when the events were happening. So that when Mark's gospel hit the newsstand, so to speak, and was widely disseminated, Mark's gospel that was written for people way beyond the actual area that the events happened in, people could have said, hang on, it wasn't like that at all. 30 years, which takes us from 2013 back to what? 1983? What happened in 1983? If I said that Union Street in 1983 was obliterated by a jumbo jet crashing along it, and wrote that in the P&J, which might actually print it, what will be the letters column full of the next day? So, no, it isn't. Give us the photograph. I was there in 1983. I was on that jumbo jet and it didn't land on Union Street. People would say, no, it's not true. And there are other things we need to take into account. We need to take into account the growth of the early church in the face of Jewish and Roman and Greek opposition. See, we think of the church now, we think of the UK, and we think of it shrinking. Although numerically, it's not anymore. But we look at other parts of the world nowadays, and we see the church growing massively and rapidly, and we see it growing in the places where it's most opposed. And that was exactly the case in the early days of the church. When on the day of the resurrection, there were maybe about 120 followers of Jesus. And it grew massively, despite the opposition. Despite the fact, from the very beginning, the religious authorities, the Jews, the political authorities, the military authorities, the Romans, and the intellectual authorities, the Greeks, all tried to suppress it. So how did that happen? Come up with a better theory than the fact that it was based on something real, true, historical, something that happened. We have the martyrdom of early Christians and Christians ever since. You don't die for something you know to be a myth. You don't die for something you know to be a big joke. You don't die for something that's really just a kind of an urban myth that you've been putting around the office. When the stakes get high, you say, well, I was only joking. And you back off. And yet history of the growth of the Christian church has been the history of people who've been willing to lay down their lives for the sake of advancing this message about Jesus Christ. And so there's been the test of time. People say, well, time isn't a test. Actually, time is a test. Time is a test of what we call hoaxes. And it doesn't take long these days for a hoax to fall against that test of time. You put your hands up if you've received recently an email from some dear sister in Africa, Ivory Coast, who is offering you $50 million if you just send her your bank details. Right? Well, it didn't take long for anybody with an internet connection to be able to find out that that's a hoax. It's a scam. Piltdown Man. Anyone remember Piltdown Man? I mean, not personally, you know. Okay? A hoax. See, what happens when something extraordinary is claimed is that everybody fastens on it and it gets tested to death. Not that it gets, oh, yeah, widely accepted. It gets tested to death. So that if it's a hoax, it gets exposed by time, through time. Not cemented and believed in by more and more people. That doesn't happen with hoaxes. Hoaxes get exposed. So that even now, we can read. If you want to read a book like Agent Zigzag by Ben McIntyre, hoax people, hoax characters, hoax stories, they get exposed. That's what investigative journalism does. That's what historians do. That's what cynics blog about. That's what satirists do. But this story has done the exact opposite. It's grown and grown. So is Jesus the Christ? Is he God? Well, if you want to look at it on the basis of evidence, really you've got to end up saying yes. But there's the crunch. The title is You Choose. On what basis? Because the claims of Jesus prompt us to choose on some basis other than, quotes, evidence. The claims of Jesus prompt people and have prompted people all down history, and they're doing so today, even in Aberdeen, to choose on the basis of whether they want him or not. It's not, is it true? It's, do I want it to be true? It's not, yes, the evidence is there, I'll believe in Jesus. It's, if I believe in Jesus, that's going to change my life. Might alter my street credibility. I don't think I will. And then all the spurious arguments come up. That is, believing in Jesus is a matter of the will far more than a matter of the intellect. It's a matter of the desires of our hearts, far more than a matter of the weighing up of evidence. What I've tried to do is show you that all the evidence is there, so that if you're a Christian, you can be a little bit more confident, and if you're not, maybe it's given you something to think about. But the real question posed by Jesus is, will we submit? Will we trust? Will we accept him? And that's where the crunch lies. And yet, all the way through this historically reliable document, we see Jesus teaching and people experiencing that to say yes to Jesus is always better than to say no. That is, the news that is historically reliable is good news, not bad. Let's pray.